Hello, and welcome to Jolly's Spring 2015 podcast series. This is Jen Whitley, the Communications Co-Editor of the Journal of Language and Literacy Education, a peer-reviewed open-access journal housed in the Department of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Georgia. Today I'll be speaking with Deborah Van Dunen and Catherine Schoon-Tanis about their piece titled, Who Are Our Mockingbirds? Participatory Literacies in a Community-Wide Reading Program. Thank you both for being with me today. So for our first question, I wanted to ask, what are the main takeaways that readers will get from reading your article?
The thing that we hope readers will think about after reading our article are the myriad literacy practices that we touch on in the article. So for example, we hope that readers will think about the complexities involved in embodied and participatory literacies. In organizing and in enacting the Mockingbird Project, we hoped to, yes, create time and space for participants to read a common text. In our community, read Harper Lee's novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. In this project, though, we hoped that through engaging in a creative project in creating a mockingbird, that participants would tap into a way of thinking or a way of expressing thoughts and feelings sparked by the novel. We hope that they would express thoughts and feelings that they wouldn't normally express if they had just come and sat either in a desk or in a chair and talked about a print-based text. We hoped that by using their hands to create a piece of art, participants would embody the novel and the themes from the novel in ways beyond simply sitting and discussing a book. And while we found that people did indeed do this, the way that they embodied and participated was complicated and complex. We were surprised, as we tried to explain in the article, by what participants did and did not do. So, their way of participating with both the novel and with the creative process was complicated and complex. Similarly, we saw participants use a variety of complicated and complex visual literacies. We found that the place or places in which the mockingbirds were created, the materials available and used for those creations, and the directions given to participants all affected how the mockingbirds were created. We noticed that some of the participants were willing to risk what they were willing to create and how they were willing to create it. For example, it felt to us as the observers, as the researchers, that some participants were willing to risk self-identifying in a way that they wouldn't do normally if they were sitting in a classroom discussing a book or sitting in a book discussion discussing a book. And they did this self-identifying in interesting visual ways. Sometimes, as mentioned in the article, we just didn't understand their visual literacy, which both challenged us and inspired us. As scholars, we were challenged because we wanted to understand as much as we could about the creation and about the mockingbirds. As learners, we were inspired because of how much there is for us to learn. The things we didn't understand both challenged us and inspired us. Additionally, we found that place played a substantial role in the literacy practices of our participants. Mockingbird templates were available at book discussions, at libraries, at the keynote addresses, and in participating classrooms. Each of these places held different meanings for participants. For example, book discussions were held at churches and at pubs. Classrooms were in private schools, charter schools, and public schools. What participants heard as they discussed the book and what they experienced in these different places influenced what they created. We have just started, in some ways, to think about these questions.
Thank you, Catherine. For my next question, I wanted to ask, what are some of the practitioner-based implications raised in this article?
We think there are rich possibilities with this activity. There is so much potential for learning when a community comes together to read and experience a common text. And we love the art project that our community did. But we think there are some things we could do differently. First, we would have clearer directions for the Mockingbird template. We would be clearer about the fact that the Mockingbirds would become part of a larger art piece, but that they would also need to stand on their own as their own piece of art. So we would stress that audiences would need to experience and understand The Mockingbirds on their own as an individual piece of art, as well as a part of a larger collaborative piece. We would be clearer about who the audience is. We would have more conversations about our community and what our community looks like. For example, we would have more conversations about power and who in our community holds power. We think this could inspire rich conversations about adults and adolescents, or conversations about those with money and those without, or conversations, perhaps most importantly, about race. These are all important conversations, and we would also include either a written piece or a written and spoken piece to go along with the created Mockingbirds. We found that having to talk about creative decisions both clarified the artist's process and added to the audience's understanding.
Thank you. Deborah, what motivated you to write this article?
There are a couple of reasons we were motivated to write this article. First of all, we just felt very privileged to have been able to participate in the community-wide reading program in the different ways that we did. For both of us, it was our first experience in being involved in something like this and something of this magnitude, something that involved community members, classroom teachers, and school-aged children. And we were eager to share some of these experiences with the audience of Jolly, literacy researchers, classroom teachers, librarians, and community members. The research data, artifacts, and stories that we collected as part of this community-wide reading program, it seemed to us to be a gold mine with so much that we have started analyzing and that we have yet to analyze, reflect on, question, and learn about. This Mockingbird article that is being published in Jolly this month represents just one aspect of our community-wide reading program. And we decided to focus on the Mockingbird Art Project as opposed to other aspects of the community-wide program, I think simply because it was just so visually stunning. And it involved so many different people, so many different stakeholders. The individual Mockingbirds that we collected as part of this are what we think just beautiful. We've loved looking at them, at all of the hundreds of them that we collected. And looking at them to see what they represented in terms of student voice or community member perspective. The collaborative, collaged Mockingbird, when it was displayed on the final closing event, was just simply stunning. And it was really neat to think about the individual aspect of it as well as this collaborative aspect and all of the different issues and perspectives that this Mockingbird project at least addresses or points to. The other reason that Kathy and I wanted to write this article was that it represented for us in some ways a full circle of our collaboration over the years. In the past, Kathy and I have been English high school teachers, and we both taught at the same school for a while. And when we did so, we both taught sophomore English. And To Kill a Mockingbird was one of the units that we taught together. And it was one of our favorite units to teach. I remember having my students come over for tea time to my house, actually, and I dressed up as Miss Maudie. And I think some of those memories of teaching To Kill a Mockingbird and of talking about the issues that the book addresses with high school students are some of my highlights as a high school teacher. Kathy and I loved collaborating together, trying to think of new ideas and new activities and assignments that we could share with our students. And so now, as college professors, it's wonderful for Kathy and I to be able to collaborate in a very different way than as high school teachers, now as researchers. It's been wonderful to collaborate and to come together and think about To Kill a Mockingbird in this new way. So lots of reasons motivated us to write this article.
I think it's great that y'all have gotten to work together in so many different ways. For our last question today, in what ways did your study challenge you to rethink and reconcile the theories you call on to frame your research?
Our article represents early phases of our research and scholarship on this issue, on this topic. And in writing it, it very much encouraged us to rethink and reframe some of the theories that we address in the article. In the article, we address three theories: embodied literacy, critical visual literacy, and place-based literacy. And for each of these, we were familiar with these theories and approaches, the scholarship surrounding each of them. And yet they took on new life and new meaning as we looked at the Mockingbird Project through these different lenses. And as you can tell from the article, we ask a lot of questions and we sort of grapple with the implications and the affordances and limitations that surround each one of these theories. For embodied literacy, we looked at how participants performed and positioned various identities in and through their creating of these mockingbirds. In classroom spaces, how often does an activity or an experience like this occur? We wondered about that. What sorts of things prevent it from occurring? What sorts of things can encourage students to better be able to perform and position their various identities? And what risks do students have to take, or do students take, when they position and perform various identities within different spaces, such as a classroom? In terms of critical visual literacy, Kathy and I were very aware of the research surrounding and some of the scholarship surrounding visual literacy, but we noticed that a lot of it focused on students as consumers of images. We were having students and participants produce or create art. What does that mean when we talk about visual literacy and critical visual literacy, when students are producers? And what happens when they produce art and they're not so aware of visual literacy skills or strategies or approaches, or of critical literacy approaches? Conversely, how do we build on what students already know and do in terms of visual literacy? And perhaps some of the Mockingbird Project didn't tap into their visual literacy skills. We looked, some of the mockingbirds that we studied did not show evidence to us of understanding concepts of visual literacy. So it made us wonder, how do we best teach students or participants visual literacy skills? When does this occur? When should it occur? How should it occur? How can students be better scaffolded into thinking about visual literacy and critical visual literacy, particularly in the world in which we live, where we are surrounded by images? But we very much were excited about the fact that our project isn't just about consuming, it's also about producing. And what does that mean and look like within a classroom? For place-based pedagogy, it was so exciting for us to think about this, particularly as it was enveloped in a community-wide reading program. But it opened the door for us in terms of thinking about how do we define community? And what happens when we do define community? What happens when we don't? Who gets to define it? What gets lost when particular groups get to define it? And a geographical definition of community, which is often the way place-based pedagogy defines community or place, I think is a place to start, but there are so many other concepts and experiences with community that I think could also be addressed, even as we think about a community-wide reading program. And as we go forward and hope to plan future community-wide reading programs, even just thinking about definitions of community, who is included, who isn't, represents some really exciting potentials for us.
Well, thank you both so much for being willing to speak with us today. We really appreciate it. Listeners, please continue the dialogue began here today by engaging in this piece in our spring 2015 issue.